This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. So here on the health segment, we usually have a monthly segment on mental health issues called the Psychiatry Series. But starting this month, we're rebranding it to include broader, more encompassing perspectives of mental health. So we won't just be talking to psychiatrists. We'll be talking to psychologists, counselors. We'll be trying to look at different perspectives like community perspective of mental health beyond the clinical perspectives as well. So today we are kickstarting this sort of new take on mental health with Dr. Alvin Ng, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists. And what we'll be talking about today is, you know, we hear so much more discussions now about mental health issues such as depression and anxiety and prevention of suicide. And alongside that comes the increased need for professional help. But how do you find the right psychologist or, you know, mental health professional? And how do you know whether they are qualified to give you the help and the attention that you need? And so that's what we'll be discussing with Dr. Alvin Ng today. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thanks, Xiaoying.
So if you have any questions for Dr. Alvin, you can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Alvin, let's start with the national statistics that we always hear related to mental health. So the National Health and Morbidity Survey from 2015, we always cite that saying 1 in 3 Malaysians suffer from a mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. What does that actually mean? And is that really representative?
Yeah, I think we need to be careful about how we interpret the results, because I don't think it says 1 in 3 has got a mental health disorder. I think it's more the mental health issue.
Issues,
yeah.
All right.
So
I stand corrected.
That we don't create too much alarm. Mm-hmm. Because 1 in 3 is a lot.
Yeah.
But 1 in 3 people at any one time has got a mental health issue. So it can just be daily stress, having difficulties adjusting, having relationship problems, things like that. But when it comes to actual mental disorders, of course, we have got less than that. But if you look at the WHO statistics, that's about 1 in 5
mm-hmm.
at any one time.
Okay, that's global.
That's global. Mm-hmm. So it's about 20% at any one time. And
right.
We're talking about a whole range of disorders, not just very severe ones. For example, you can have mild depression, you can have moderate depression, and you can go into full-blown schizophrenia where your reality is pretty much off. So it can be anywhere in between.
Okay. Yeah. So with that kind of those statistics, that prevalence in mind, you know, how many Malaysians who, you know, should be seeking professional help for mental health issues are actually doing so?
It's hard to tell because I don't know of any data set that shows that. We'll need to get information, statistics from government clinics, from private clinics. From what I know, we haven't got that data yet. Maybe from the government side we do, because there's definitely a registry. But from the private side, we don't know.
Okay. Specifically, what registry is that?
Well, a registry of who gets admitted, for example, into a hospital for a psychiatric reason,
mm-hmm.
and the kinds of diagnoses they have. I mean, we have got 4 large psychiatric hospitals. I mean, they've definitely got statistics there.
Okay.
How many come in, how many stay, how long do they stay for, right. how many are, you know, discharged.
Okay.
And also in the wards, in other hospitals, that's got psychiatric unit. But that's as much as I think we probably have.
Okay.
But when it comes to private settings, I don't think we have.
Also, that doesn't tell us how many people are seeking help for perhaps the other mental health issues.
Yeah, like day-to-day kind of thing. I mean, seeking counsellors' help, because counsellors typically see cases that are not as serious, but people who need some kind of readjustments, reparenting, as some call it. And then the more severe ones, seeing private psychologists. We don't know the numbers.
Okay. Yeah. So since you've already mentioned it, what I wanted to ask you was, you know, we have counsellors, we have therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, all the different mental health professionals that would sort of exist within this discipline.
Yeah.
What are the differences in their roles?
Yeah.
Who do we see at what point?
All right. Very good question. I mean, people tend to ask me that like a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So firstly, I'll talk about psychologists. When we mention the word psychologist, we are actually, I mean, we are usually referring to clinical psychologists, clinical or counseling psychologists. So psychologists, our basic skill that tells us apart from all the other professions is psychological assessment. We are trained in psychological testing. We do the investigations to find out how people are able to function and what are some of the things that they need to function better. So that's what we are expert at. And at the same time, we also train in providing therapy, psychotherapy. And it depends on our approaches. We can do cognitive behavior therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy. Some even do psychodynamic psychotherapy. There are many approaches to therapy. It depends on the individual who's seeking therapy, which one is more suited for them. So that's a basic description of a psychologist. Counselors, which are different from counseling psychologists. I need to talk about the main differences, because in Malaysia, a lot of people who call themselves counseling psychologists are more likely to be counselors and not counseling psychologists. But in our country, we don't make that distinction, which is something that blurs the two. But if you go to the US, counseling psychologist is different from a counselor. There are two different professions, and a psychologist is the one that does the assessment.
Okay.
Counselors are very nice, fluffy people who are, you know, who listen to you and help you process your emotions and get you to understand yourselves better in relation to your problem.
But I suppose they have a significant role to play you need to see a psychologist.
Correct. I mean, we are all mental health professionals. We have got our strengths. So in terms of who to see first, I would say go and see the counselor first. Usually, because they're probably easier to access. There are more of them around. And if your problem is found to be a bit more severe than what they can handle, they will usually refer you out, perhaps to a psychologist or to a psychiatrist if they feel that you may need some medication to regulate your moods before you see the psychologist.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a psychiatrist within the space?
Psychiatrist is a medical doctor who has gone to do a master's in psychological medicine or psychiatry, so that they're able to prescribe medication for mental illness. And that's basically it. Some would have training in psychotherapy and they are able to provide psychotherapy. But from what I know, most do not do it. They basically prescribe medication and the psychotherapy is done by the psychologist.
Okay. Yeah. And if you say that the counselor is usually the first port of call for somebody who is going through some issues, where would we usually access a counselor in Malaysia?
Well, we have got counselors within the government setting, public hospitals, also within the, if I'm not wrong, I'm going to just check the facts on this. The Women's Ministry, and also within the Public Services Department. These are the government side.
Okay.
And private ones, you can probably just Google them.
Okay.
Or you can also check with the Lembaga Counselor. That's the Counseling Board of Malaysia. They would have a list actually on their website.
Okay.
So you can, you know, see the legit ones.
Okay. And so, you know, in line with that thought about counsellors, our Deputy Prime Minister, I think last year she talked about plans to produce 10,000 lay counsellors. And the Deputy Minister of Women, Hannah Yeo, also mentioned this at our BFM's recent Health and Living Junior event, again, emphasising the role of lay counsellors.
Yeah.
So how's that different again from the counsellors we've been talking about?
Well, I suppose what they are referring to as lay counsellors would be a step care kind of system where we acknowledge that we don't have enough trained counsellors. We can, I suppose, upskill some people within the community to learn basic counselling skill to address mental issues in people who don't have very severe issues. The whole idea is to prevent these people who are in distress to become more distressed. So it's to address the lack of mental health access.
Mm-hmm.
But how are they going to train 10,000 counselors and lay counselors, and how long are they going to take? I don't know. I don't have the information.
Okay.
But it sounds like many, many more years to come.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But would you say that this is a stopgap measure?
Well, part of it. You know, I think human resource... to address the lack of human resources is one thing. We need to also build in a whole system where we are aligned and we are coordinated. It's not just about having more counselors. I don't think it will work very well that way,
mm-hmm.
because yes, you can get people to access them, but then what next?
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to have a system where every single lay counselor has to be accountable for what they do, and they need to report to a supervisor counselor who's trained.
Okay.
And then they need to be monitored that way to make sure that it protects the public. And what if the supervisor counselor is not able to do very much? Then there has to be some kind of a referral system to a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
or maybe by then there might be even assistant psychologists to address the problem. At the same time, also make sure that they get psychiatric attention where needed. So a system like that needs to work so that you don't have people falling through the cracks. That's basically it.
So in that sort of ideal system, mm-hmm. where are we?
Oh, we're far behind.
Okay.
Not yet. I think a good gold standard would be the UK, where they've got a step care system for improving mental health access. It's called IAP. IAP stands for Improve Access to Psychological Treatment or Psychological Therapies. So what they've done was they acknowledged that they didn't have enough clinical psychologists and that clinical psychologists should only be addressing serious problems. They have trained professionals who come under the clinical psychologist to be supervised by the clinical psychologist, but mm-hmm. they are trained to address mild to moderate issues in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So automatically that increases access to psychological therapy to the community, and the communities, they know what they can go for. The medical professionals, they know who to refer to. So all of this would need to involve medical doctors as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you asked me just now who's the first port of call. Yeah, one is counselor, the mm-hmm. other one would be medical doctor.
Because mm-hmm.
if they see you for a medical condition,
yep.
you know, sometimes you also come with psychological issues that if the doctor is able to detect or screen, they can then refer on to either the psychiatrist or the psychologist,
yeah.
but usually psychiatrist first.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I would like to come back to later is primary care.
Mm-hmm.
The GPs in our country,
yeah.
are they adequately equipped and trained mm-hmm. to recognize mental health issues in their patients or within the population? And, how can they best serve the mental health needs of our people? And we'll be looking a little bit more at sort of finding the right psychologist. How can we identify perhaps who's a bogus psychologist? Where can people go to seek the right help? And what are the consequences when you are seeing somebody who's not actually properly trained or, whether we even have licensing in Malaysia? A few items that we will get to after this quick break. I'm speaking to Dr. Alvin Ng today, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, on our new mental health segment, which we're calling Mind Matters. Today, we are speaking to Dr. Alvin Ng, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists. And we're talking about how do you find the right mental health professional? What are the different roles that different professionals play, like counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists? And because Dr. Alvin Ng is a clinical psychologist, of course, we'll be drilling down into specifically how do we find the right psychologist. Actually, in terms of the standards of clinical psychologists in Malaysia, Dr. Alvin, is there a licensing requirement? How do we know that their training is, ensuring that they're operating or providing services at an appropriate standard?
Well, currently in Malaysia, we haven't got any licensing for clinical psychologists. We're still working on it. It's going to take some time because we are also under the Allied Health Professions Act 2016 mm-hmm. that is currently not enforceable yet, but we are working on it. Mm-hmm. But in terms of how we tell the standards, we have got the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychology that requires all clinical psychologists who are trained in Malaysia mm-hmm. to have at least 1,500 of supervised clinical training hours so that they are able to be members of the MSCP. So although we don't have any licensing, the membership is for now enough to let you know if a clinical psychologist is a legit practitioner.
Okay. And so then how would people be able to find out if the psychologist that they're intending to see or talk to is somebody who's who has these appropriate qualifications?
Well, one way is to contact the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychology. You can easily Google the website, and there is an email address on it that you can use to email the exco, and someone would reply your email. We used to also have a whole list of members that the public can check on. That has somehow been taken down for the time being because I think they're updating the list. So hopefully it will be up soon for the public to check.
Okay. This is, we have Dr. Alvin Ng today talking about finding the right mental health professional. If you have any questions for him, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So how then can we protect patients and consumers if we have cases of people being bogus psychologists mm-hmm. or counsellors and not holding the right qualifications yeah. to provide the services that they purport to yeah. do?
Well, firstly, if anyone claims to be a counsellor, you can always check with the counselling board because they need to be registered as registered counsellors. So that's quite easy. Mm-hmm. When it comes to psychiatrists, they come under the Malaysian medical council, mm-hmm. you can always check with them or check with the Malaysian Psychiatric Association. They would have a list as well. But when it comes to clinical psychologists, because we only have a list of registered members and that list is not there anymore, it's a bit difficult. And a lot of people tend to confuse between all of us who are within the mental health field, mental health professionals. So one way is to get educated about our qualifications. For a clinical psychologist to be able to be a clinical psychologist in Malaysia, you need to have at least a master's degree, a professional master's degree in clinical psychology. Mm-hmm. But if you are a graduate of the UK, US, New Zealand, and Canada, from what I know, you need to have a doctorate level professional clinical psychology degree. You may also have a PhD in psychology, but you need to make sure that a PhD is a professional PhD, not just a purely research one. So, you know, by saying that also, you can see that it's quite difficult to want to check anyone's background because you probably have to go into the university's website and check if their degree is a practice degree. That is if the practitioner doesn't tell you, because sometimes you find that one of the telltale signs of someone who might be bogus is that they'll give you a very long list mm-hmm. of qualifications, credentials, and they don't name any of their institutions.
Okay. Yeah. So to be wary if you're not seeing reputable institutions
yes.
Attached to the psychologist, what would be some of the other red flags, do you think?
Other red flags would be to claim to do all kinds of things as though they're too good to be true. But most likely, they are too good to be true. Mm-hmm. They have very fancy websites. They do all kinds of public, you know, PR type thing. Not to say they're not legit, but they're more likely to not be because being a mental health professional, you don't have to be so out there. I know you need to have a business and to get clients, but sooner or later, people will know who you are if you're good. And just basically being fancy. One of the things to do to be more educated is given the kind of problem you think you might have, for example, depression or some kind of anxiety disorder, go to, for example, the American Psychological Association's website, or just to Google or do any other kinds of search on what are the typical treatments or therapy that is given to someone with an anxiety disorder.
Okay.
It will come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because by then, if you were to see a so-called psychologist who may be a legit psychologist, but this person gives you vitamins instead,
mm-hmm.
and you take those vitamins for the last 2 years without any kind of psychotherapy, something must be wrong.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we see sometimes is on social media, like mm-hmm. on Facebook pages, advertisements purporting to offer courses, short courses over the weekend,
yeah.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from there, you can provide counseling services, you know. How legitimate are these?
Definitely not. You cannot become a counselor just after 2 weeks or a weekend course on certain skills. You know, it takes years before you can practice and qualify as a counselor or even a psychotherapist. So these courses are meant to be maybe value added, just to give you some knowledge, but they definitely are not professional courses. So if you want to be a professional, I would suggest don't waste your money on these courses. At the same time, you can also check with the Malaysian Quality Agency, MQA, because they are the ones that accredit these kind of courses to make sure that the public is protected.
Mm.
If you find that any of these agencies or institutions say that they are being accredited, but not by MQA, but other places, then you need to also check the background of these other places. Are they really legit? Because anyone can just simply start an association and claim to be legit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think the Registrar of Societies in Malaysia actually check your background to see if you're professionally, you know, appropriate.
Okay. Yeah. So then, you know, what are the risks when people get help or seek advice or services from people who are not actually mental health professionals?
Well, the risk is that you don't get the correct or the appropriate treatment. Because as professionals, especially like clinical psychologists, I can just talk for us, what we do are all evidence-based. We don't just simply come up with some mumbo-jumbo kind of therapy and say, okay, you'll be fine after this.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is we go through the literature, we share this with our clients, we give them options of the kinds of treatment they might want to take up, and we also advise them on, you know, the pros and cons of certain kinds of treatment. Just like if you were to go to a psychiatrist, they will give you an option of medication that you might be taking,
mm-hmm.
and you have some kind of a choice on the kind of medications you get based on those options, because a professional, I guess you can say healer, yeah, either a psychiatrist, counselor, or psychologist should be able to cite some literature that shows evidence of how you might get better. Whereas those who are not trained are not likely to have access to any of that literature because they have not been trained that way.
Mm.
Or even if they know that we do that, they still don't have the updated literature. And they may use literature that are just confusing to you to the point that you just believe whatever they say.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, sometimes when you see a friend, you feel better already. That's also legit in a way. But again, friends don't have evidence-based methods.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to someone who claimed that they are qualified and they're not, they're probably a bit like a friend, but they're out to get your money.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting the best out of what you're paying. That's about the risk. Because let's say they don't do any harm, you actually do get better, but that's the risk that you take.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, from what I know of people who are frauds, they do all kinds of things and they claim all kinds of things. You know, I've seen so-called psychologists in private hospitals that don't have qualifications in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually encourage private hospitals to really look at who they're allowing to practice in their hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm rambling a bit now, but...
No. We have a question here on WhatsApp from James. What happens if you find the right mental health professional, whether it's a psychiatrist, psychologist, or counselor, but their fees are too high to afford on a regular basis?
Yeah.
And are there other options?
There are many options. I mean, it's quite unfortunate that, you know, some private... practitioners charge very high, but it depends on their clientele. Some can afford, but many cannot. So what you do would be, firstly, I would go and seek help at public hospitals. You may have to wait a bit because their wait list is very long. That's where you need to get a referral from a medical doctor to get referred. That's an option. Another option would be to go to NGOs, such as, let's say, Malaysian Mental Health Association. Yeah, they would charge much lower fees, and you can get help from there. You can get referrals from there too if they're not able to see you. Mm-hmm. So those are options.
Is cost a significant obstacle for people to access mental health care?
Yes, definitely. Because if you look at the kinds of fees psychologists and counselors are charging per hour, can be, well, from what I know, as low as 50 ringgit per hour, up to about 400 per hour. Mm-hmm. It's quite a lot.
And is that not regulated?
It is not regulated because, you know, it depends. There's no law to say that it has to be regulated. Unlike in psychiatry, it is, you know, there is a certain, you know...
Doctor's fees are regulated.
Doctor's fees and all. But when it comes to other mental health professionals, not yet.
Okay, all right. And then, you know, if we're talking about... accessing psychologists in the public health sector. Mm-hmm. Let's look a little bit at the sort of the number of psychologists we have per population.
Yeah.
Do we have enough psychologists?
Oh, well, definitely not.
And if you break it down to the public health sector, do we have enough there?
No, not also not enough. They've got, from my last dealings with the Ministry of Health, they've got about... 32, 33, around that.
For the whole country.
For the whole country, 32, 33 clinical psychologists. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
They've got many more counsellors within the Ministry of Health, but for clinical psychologists, only about 32, and majority of them are very junior. They've just graduated.
I mean, whether it's 32 or, you know, even if it's 50, if we're
still
talking about double digits, that's very, very low.
Very low. I mean, we have got 32 million people in the country.
Yes, that's right.
Right? If we take like 20% of that, there's no way we can address problems of 20% of people in the country.
Do you know if anything's being done to increase that number significantly?
We have training centres for clinical psychologists. We're building the numbers very slowly because we haven't got enough trainers. That's a problem. We haven't got enough lecturers. We haven't got enough supervisors who are senior enough to provide supervision. So the growth is slow in that sense because we want to make sure that any institution that has a clinical psychology, you know, training program would need to ensure quality.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got too many students under one particular supervisor, then you're not going to get very good quality clinicians. So that's one of the main barriers.
It's a bit of a catch-22, though. If you just don't start producing graduates in clinical psychology, you're not going to get that mass.
Yeah, that's right. Which is why I like the whole idea that came from the UK, that IAP. System, improve access in psychological therapy.
The step care system that
step
you mentioned.
Care. So it's step by step. So if you are mild, you go to the lower step practitioner, and over there it's called the PWP, the psychological welfare practitioner, psychological well-being practitioner. And if they are not able to address it, then you go up one step to see the HIT, that's a high intensity therapist.
Right.
And then only if things you don't get help there, then you go up to the clinical psychologist. Okay. So at least you reach out more to the masses.
Yep.
Yeah.
Without having to burden at a certain level.
Yeah. Yep. It's something that I feel we probably can do in Malaysia because within the Ministry of Health, you have got the psychology officers who are neither clinical psychologists nor counsellors. They are pretty much basic psychology degree holders who are not necessarily trained. They get training on the job there.
So
they
would be trainee apprentice type of level?
Kind of. Mm-hmm. But these were the psychology officers who are the people who can be upskilled to be trained therapists so that they can actually provide the service that's needed.
Okay, all right. We are talking to Dr. Alvin Ng, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists today about finding the right mental health professional. You can call us if you have any questions, 03773 2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after a few messages right here on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. On our Mind Matters segment today, which is our rebranded segment on mental health issues, we're speaking to Dr. Alvin Ng, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists. And we're talking about finding the right mental health professionals, understanding who are the different professionals who can provide mental health services, and also looking at things like training, qualifications, licensing and quality. So ensuring that you are getting help from the right person. If you have any questions, call us 03773 2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a question here on WhatsApp from Ng. Are religious-based counsellors at all useful for mental health and how so?
Well, it depends on the counsellor, because some counsellors, when they see a certain client, the client is very religiously inclined, and if they have the same religion, then, you know, if they find that bringing religion in is helpful, they may do so, as long as they also use evidence-based methods. Because religion can be a very inspiring thing for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't impose it, and you don't do any harm with it, it's okay.
Mm. I mean, you know, religious aspects is important to ensure broader access to services
well-being
at the community level.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, one of the things to do to increase access to psychological help would be to train religious leaders in mental health literacy, and knowing how to provide help and to provide them with very basic training in maybe counseling, and certain kinds of treatment methods, and for them to know who to refer to when they need to.
Okay. And speaking of sort of providing basic training to different professionals, there's a question here on WhatsApp. In the United States, there are some medical professionals who are certified medical doctors, but who are also trained in counseling.
Yes.
So they are able to provide both medical prescriptions and talk therapy to their patients.
Yeah.
Is this something that we can do here in Malaysia, especially, you know, earlier I said that I'd like to touch on how can we equip GPs with that sort of that awareness and sensitization as well.
Oh, definitely, because it's done in Australia. It's also done in the UK, from what I know, in the US. So if GPs are, I mean, they are in primary care, so if anyone has any problem, they can access a GP quite easily without having to have any stigma on them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're able to provide psychological care, basic ones, that can actually prevent a lot of people from getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And at least you can address it at the primary care level. For me, it's a fantastic idea. And it is something for us to suggest, I suppose, to more GPs to get more trained, more training. It's not to say that they don't have enough training. It depends on their medical training, because it's touched on a bit in their medical training. It depends on them whether or not they want to carry on to be better trained.
Mm. So let's look now at the individual aspect of when a person goes to see a mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say they should be thinking about to know whether this is the right person that I'm speaking to for the issues that I'm going through?
That's a great question, because, you know, we don't expect every professional that we go to be able to address your problems, because we are all different in our approaches and our training, and sometimes personality clash.
Yeah.
So if you find that after two or three sessions, things are not going too well, it'll be good if you can let the therapist or the doctor know you know, that you're not too happy about something, you need to give them feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really feel that nothing's working out, then go and see somebody else.
Okay.
It's okay. It doesn't mean that you are so severe that no one can help. That's just the one person.
Okay.
It's kind of like dating. You know, you see someone you don't quite like, then you go and...
I would say that applies also just that relationship between a patient and any healthcare professional.
Exactly,
actually.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't lose hope if you find that a counselor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist doesn't seem to be helpful.
Okay. Yeah. You know, could you address some misconceptions that people have when it comes to understanding, you know, what to expect out of their mental health care?
Right.
How does it really work for them? Mm-hmm. What does a mental health visit look like?
Okay. Well, firstly, if you feel that you have got a severe enough problem to see a mental health professional, understand that it took you some time to get to that level.
Mm.
And it will also take you some time for you to get it treated. So seeing a mental health professional is not just a one-off. You'll need to see them by 8 to 10 sessions perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And you may also need to go on medication to regulate your moods. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult for you to change the way you think and the way you behave. So a typical visit, the first visit, would involve assessment. Just like how when you send your car for repair, you wouldn't want to trust any mechanic who says, I know exactly what to do even before looking at your car.
Mm.
So you will need to go through some form of assessment. And from the assessment, the professional should be able to show you evidence of why they think what they think. For example, if you have been diagnosed with depression, there must be some evidence they are able to show you that points to you having a certain amount of depression.
Mm.
And from there, they need to be able to come up with evidence-based methods, options that you might want to take in terms of the kind of treatment you want to go with.
Okay.
And they need to also be able to show you at the end of treatment, how would you be feeling and thinking and performing? What would it involve? If it involves behavior change, then they need to let you know what are the things you need to do. And behavior change will also come with a lot of sabotaging thoughts. And are they going to be addressing that?
Okay. Because so much of it is about you being able to to internalize, you know, what you are talking about or what kind of therapy you're receiving, right? Because the idea of it is not to sit there and have the psychologist fix the problems for you.
Our job is to not make you happy.
Mm.
We're not there to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
We're there to help you get skill so that you're better able to manage the challenges that you face on a daily basis. So we are equipping you with skills.
Mm.
Psychiatrists give you pills. Counselors, psychologists, we give you skills.
Mm.
It rhymes, yo.
Okay, yeah. And unfortunately, you can't make our problems go away, can you?
No. It takes more than two. It takes a whole village, actually. And this is where the rest of the community need to take responsibility also for an individual's mental health. We are all responsible.
Okay. And, you know, there's so much, and you've mentioned a couple of times as well, you know, go on the internet, you know, and look for certain kinds of information, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, at what point would it actually be a risk to go on Google and get the wrong information about what you're going through?
Yeah, well, there are tons of very fancy information going around. And when you are ill, you're vulnerable, you tend to be desperate and you go for anything that sounds fancy. I would really encourage anyone to go to websites by, you know, confirm legitimate organizations such as the American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, the British, you know, Psychological Association. There's any kind of mental health type website. But and avoid any individual websites by individuals. Not to say that individuals may not be legit, but it's more risky. Unless that person can show that they have got memberships with, again, organizations that are
reputable, professional,
you know, like Malaysian Psychiatric Association.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do wrong, you know who to contact.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a question here on WhatsApp, which you've actually addressed earlier, but worth revisiting again. What are the differences between a clinical psychologist and a counselor, and which is better?
Well, I wouldn't say any one of us are better than each other. If you need to get assessed, you go to see a clinical psychologist. And if you have got a problem that is quite severe, a counselor may not be able to handle it. Not to say that a counselor is not as good. It depends, again, on the area and their skills. Because earlier on I said counselors are nice, fluffy people, mm-hmm. because they are. They are nice, they're very nurturing. Whereas psychologists, we tend to be more technical. We look into doing detective work and being investigative. We are more, what's that word, quantitative, where we look at numbers and we test you. You know, we do psychological testing. And there's definitely a blur between the two. We overlap in terms of providing psychotherapy because counseling is basically psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. It's to help people process their feelings, their thoughts, so that they are better able to make sense of things and feel better after that. So psychologists can do that, so can counselors. Just that psychologists are the ones who are trained to do the testing and they tend to see the ones who are more severe.
Okay. Get to the issue of family members. You've said it takes a village and the family society plays a big part in addressing mental health issues. From your experience within the Malaysian society, you know, because mental health, there's still stigma attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
So how do people talk to their family members to say, look, I think I may be having a problem. I think I need professional help. You know, are we really open to that idea yet?
I would say some families are. I'm seeing more and more people being open and accepting of their family members having a mental health issue and knowing where to go to seek professional help. Some families are very supportive in that sense, but some other families are not. Again, like you say, stigma, there's prejudice, there's fear and shame. They probably say, how dare you say you're depressed? No one of our family members can be depressed. No way. It will bring shame to the family, things like that. These are the things that we need to educate the community, that mental illness can be largely biological. You can be the nicest parents in the world, best family in the world, and someone can still become depressed because of biology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing much you can do about it apart from addressing the biological side. You may need medication. Once you're on medication, you are more regulated. That's where you can see the counselor for supportive therapy.
So it's not an indictment of your upbringing.
No, not at all.
Or the values in your family.
No.
Like you said, it's biological.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you have a final message about what we've been discussing today, finding the right mental health professional?
I suppose we need to play our part, everyone, all of us. You don't have to be a professional to provide some kind of help. All of us need to get better mental health literacy, get educated, get savvy about mental health. Even someone like myself, as a professional, I can be mentally unhealthy too. I'm just human. And no matter how much I know about mental health treatment, I can also get depressed, and it can be due to my biology. So we are all at risk, and we are all responsible for our mental health and other people's mental health. So let's be nice.
Let's be nice. That's a great way to end. I've been speaking to Dr. Alvin Ng, clinical psychologist and founding president of the Malaysian Society of Clinical Psychologists, on our new Mind Matters segment, where we will be, every month, we'll be visiting different perspectives of mental health issues. So stay tuned for the next one in November. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.